It is time for the single coolest sports show in the country, The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics.
You've got Matt Bonner, who my notes tell me is a sandwich blogger named Red Mamba. I mean, how can you not like a guy like that?
And the Red Rocket knocks down the triple.
Red Rocket, telling you, Red Mamba might not miss a shot.
Just like in politics, in the instructional video business, you need credibility.
You want credibility? I'll give you credibility. Hey, Tim, what's my nickname?
The Red Rocket.
No.
The Sandwich Hunter?
No. Fry gun.
The Medium Fundamental?
And welcome to The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. I am Chris Ryan here in the great state of New Hampshire. Matt joins us from San Antonio, Texas. Matt, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Awesome. Appreciate you joining us for the show. And obviously, you know, the big story here in New England has been around Robert Kraft and this really, really unfortunate situation, to say the least. And I want to let all the facts kind of get out before we, you know, jump the shark too much on this. But to me, you know, this has shined a light on what is a real problem in our country, and that is in regards to sex trafficking and human trafficking. I mean, the story is about what were taking place there, and you know, I think a lot of it was probably unbeknownst to Mr. Kraft. In fact, he is found to be guilty of this. But to me, you know, this has shined a significant light on a topic that I think needs to get talked about a lot more, and that's, you know, sex trafficking in this country.
Yeah, it's definitely an issue that seems to be growing, or I don't know if more people are talking about it, more media is covering it, but it's just a awful, horrendous thing to read about that happens. And I agree with you 100%. I think we as a country, as a government, need to do more, do everything we can to prevent these type of atrocities from happening.
And that's really, again, what has shown is that you read about the New York Times article or the Boston Globe article about the conditions and about the individuals who were there, what they were doing, how they were actually living in the facility and were moved from one place to the other. And I think that, you know, there's been a lot of human trafficking that has gone on for a long period of time that we just haven't focused on because it's been perhaps good for commerce or whatever. And I think that I'm very hopeful that this is going to shine, you know, significant light on that. It's been interesting to see how, you know, this has been covered by various outlets in Boston. 98.5, the Sports Hub, which carries the Patriots games, they have basically been told not to talk about this at all. And so you have all of these individuals who have opinions on everything all of a sudden aren't talking about this. And it needs to get talked about. I mean, the cases against Mr. Kraft is, you know, significant, according to what the police department says. He denies any illegal wrongdoing. But, you know, you can't hide from these types of circumstances. The owner of the New England Patriots was arrested for soliciting prostitution. And if you're going to report on sports stories, you can't not report on things just because it's a team that is on your airwaves.
Yeah. I mean, I think human trafficking is one of those issues, one of those situations, topics that, you know, seems, I think, for a lot of people, extreme, far-fetched, like in the movies almost.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't seem real, and situations like this make it real, make it a little more tangible for people who don't really give it much thought, but it is a real issue. It's like a real thing, and it affects a lot of people in a very negative way. So, you know, hopefully, if anything, it raises the awareness and puts some pressure on the people that can do something about this to do something about it.
No, I think you know, legislators and government officials need to take a hard look at some of the, you know, conditions and some of the things that are taking place. I think a lot of times we don't want to talk about things, and we decide to, you know, to not ask questions. You know, whether it's individuals who are working in particular industries, or, you know, just things that just don't seem to make a lot of sense. You know, or if people are working, you notice them working incredible long hours, and they're immigrants, and you wonder, you know, why that's taking place. And maybe you know, ask some questions or talk to law enforcement about what's taking place. You know, again, in this situation, I don't think that Mr. Kraft, even if he is guilty of the crimes, necessarily knew what the situation was, but he should have thought about it and said, well, and asked himself, you know, some hard questions about what was taking place at that particular spa or salon. And I think that we all have to, you know, think about this, because human trafficking and sex trafficking is real. It is all around us. It's in New Hampshire. It's in rural areas. It's in urban areas. And, you know, we don't look at it or think about the amounts of, you know, indentured servitude, whether it's an individual who's coming over to the country and in order to get on their feet, they pay a certain, they or say they're going to pay a certain amount, and then they have to work that off. And then the bar keeps changing. This is a real situation that's taking place in regards to immigration. It has for many, many years, and no one wants to confront it.
Yeah, I agree 100%. You know, I'm not going to claim to be super educated on all the background of this issue, but, you know, you look at the immigration situation in our country as a whole, and, yes, yeah, so, you know, everybody's talking about the border security, the wall, all that. But you know, I think a bigger issue is just general law, legislation on how we allow people to come over legally, what that process is. Is it accessible? Is it quick? Is it a possibility for people that are in dire straits that want to come over to our country to make a better life? Because you got to think for a lot of them, it isn't, because they're choosing, you know, obviously some people are kidnapped and brought over illegally, but to your point, some people, all right, you'll help me come over here and get my feet on the ground. And
offer them a job, and then the job changed.
Exactly.
That's what seemed to be the biggest, most significant aspect of this, well, one of the most significant aspects of this, is that the individuals were brought over and told what they were going to be doing, and then seems to have changed, and then they're not making as much money as they thought they were. They're more indebted to the people that brought them over. Meanwhile, they're making millions of dollars. They're told they're going to be doing massages and working a certain amount of time. They're going to have separate living conditions, and that's the big story here, is what Kraft, you know, allegedly finds himself involved in. It's going to shine and continues to shine a significant light on this industry, and kind of the bait and switch that occurs with individuals who are able to gain work status in this country. And you're right to point out the broken immigration system, and they're given a work status in this country. They're given a job, but that job is not what they thought it was. In order to stay in this country, they think that they have to do whatever they have to do in order to keep that job, or they're going to be sent back to where they came from. So that's, again, that's why it's called, sex slavery or human trafficking or indentured servitude, because it's real, and that's the conditions that individuals are living under in order to try to legally come into the country. But meanwhile, other individuals are using our immigration laws to exploit people.
Yep, very well put, I think, Chris.
All right, we'll transition into sports, because that's what we should do, but I felt we needed to talk about that because it's not really being talked about in the way that it should be, although this is a sports show. We'll transition to the Celtics. Celtics lost in Chicago to the Bulls, and you know, this after the loss to the Bucks, and the Celtics still have this same problem where they, you know, play down to the competition or play up to the competition. So, you know, Kyrie Irving says he still doesn't think anybody's going to beat them in a seven-game series after they lose in Chicago to the Bulls. They fall behind by 25 points in the game. They end up losing by 10. Do you agree with Kyrie? There's no reason to be worried, or should you be worried? I mean, we've talked about the seeding. They're now down to fifth.
I do agree to a certain extent with what Kyrie said. However, I don't think you come out and say that, if that makes sense.
Right, and it's not the time, right. Don't worry about it. We can lose every game the rest of the year. It doesn't matter. We go to the playoffs, we're going to win.
Like,
don't worry about it.
That's not the attitude you should have.
Right.
You know, I mean, I don't know if you're trying to make everybody feel better because you just lost to a team that you definitely shouldn't have lost to. But, you know, that's not part of the mental process to prepare you for the to get better each day to prepare you for the playoffs. After a loss like that, you should be ticked off and like, we got to be better. We got to play harder. We got to compete for 48 minutes. We got to do a better job executing, playing together, communicating on defense. Like these are the, these are the things I think your mindset should be on. Knowing, like, you know, if we do that, then yeah, we have enough talent and depth on this team to pretty much beat anybody in a 7-game series if we do those things. But if you don't, you're going to lose. And it doesn't matter who. You can lose to whatever Chicago is. It's one of the worst teams in the Eastern Conference record-wise. So I just thought it was a kind of a bizarre comment to make.
Agree, and, you know, it's okay if you lose to teams on the road when you're just outplayed, and the other team is just they're just on, they're hitting shots, you're competing, they're competing, but it's a game where the Celtics just didn't really compete on the defensive end, and you know you start the second half, you're down by I think it was like 13 points at that point, and then you're looking to get to the defensive end to get stops to feed the offense and get going, and the effort just isn't there. And Brad, after the game, is again says, you know, I got to do a better job of coaching. But, you know, at what, I mean, he's, in my view, he's telling the guys what to do. He's giving them chances. Maybe you change up the lineup a little bit. Folks want to see that. But to me, I mean, you have a great team. No matter what pieces you put in what spots, you should have a great team. But these guys just don't compete. And that, you know, I don't know if you're Brad Stevens, you start to call them out or what you do in that spot and say, you know what, there's only so much I can do here if these guys are not going to play.
Yeah, that's the tricky part of being a coach.
Exactly. You don't want to lose them either.
You're part psychologist. It's figuring out how to keep an emotional even keel while at the same time mentally, psychologically getting the most out of your team competitive-wise, developing-wise, improvement-wise. So there's times as a head coach where you need to jump your guys. I mean, you need to go into a film session and call everybody out, put everything out in the open, and light a fire under them. And there's times when you don't, when you keep it, all right, we did a horrible job containing the pick and roll. Here's three clips that exemplify that. I mean, even though you could probably play 20, you're not going to sit there and play 20 clips. Cause that's how you lose guys' attention, especially in this day and age. But it's up to the coach when to push those buttons.
I think it's one of the things that changed a lot in the league too, from the good old days of like the 70s and the 80s and such, is that the video is the harshest critic. Like, you don't have, you can offer commentary, but
it doesn't lie.
Yeah, the video doesn't lie. Like, you, like the coach, if the coach is just in there talking, it's like 1965, and Red Auerbach wasn't coaching then, so we'll say 1958, and we'll say that, you know, he just rips everybody apart and says, you guys aren't doing well, this is terrible, you guys have to play harder, and the guys can be like, okay, whatever. But you show a guy a video clip of him getting blown by because he's not fighting through a pick and roll, and then everything changes, and you can just be a commentator as a coach and just say, well, look at this and this and this, and these are the reasons that we're losing, because the video is the harshest critic of all.
Right, and you know, if you do it in a level-headed way like that, no one should take it personal,
right.
But as a coach, you know your guys. There's some guys that are super sensitive and would, you know, so you just got to know which player is which. You got to obviously hold everybody equally accountable, but You know, there's certain guys you can't jump on them in front of the whole team. They'll go in the jar. So maybe you show the clip, and then you pull them aside after, not in front of the team. So they don't take it as personal or get embarrassed or whatever their issue is. There's some guys who, you know, based on, I think a lot of it is based on like upbringing and who you played for before you made it to the NBA, can take getting screamed at in front of everybody or whatever. And you can do that, and it motivates them and, you know, kind of shocks everybody else around them into like, oh, okay, yeah, we gotta tighten the ship up. But, you know, those are all the different buttons and levers that a coach has to maneuver. It's difficult.
So Zion Williamson, the Duke star, blows out his shoe during the game against UNC, and this whole, you know, debate erupts about what he should do moving forward. Like, you can't afford to get hurt. If you get hurt, you do your, you know, something to your knee, then your draft status is going to fall. You're going to lose out on millions of dollars, and folks are telling him to sit out the rest of the year. You know, Isaiah Thomas, not the former, but the latter Isaiah Thomas of Celtics fame, you know, went to Twitter and basically said, told him to shut it down. The NBA's waiting for him. And so there's two parts of this. There's the, that's weird to me to like urge a guy to quit on his team, like in the middle of the season, not even the middle of the season, the latter part of the season. So that's weird. So I don't know why you'd do that. I understand that he's playing for, you know, for free essentially at this point. Well, he's playing for free at all the points, but he's risking himself, you know, because he knows what he's going to be and how high he's going to be drafted. But, you know, your commitment should be to your team. I guess I'm kind of old fashioned in that sense, and telling a guy, oh, you shouldn't play for an NCAA championship, you should shut it down because you might get hurt, is kind of ridiculous. And I don't know how we got to this point, you know, specifically with Williamson, because there's been other great players in the past, and they haven't been urged to do so. Maybe it has something to do with the league considering lowering the draft age, which obviously has gone up and down over the last 20 years, where sometimes, you know, the Kevin Garnetts of the world were allowed to come into the league, and after they weren't prior to that, and then they changed it again. So two things there. The shutting it down, and is it time to just circumvent college? Something that even John Calipari said he's for.
This is a perfect storm of multiple angles all coming together. First of all, it shines a huge light on the obvious fact that you shouldn't have to go to college for 1 year.
Right.
Like, can you imagine if he blew his knee out or something major happened? This is a guy who's a lock to be the number one pick, make guaranteed contract for millions of dollars, guaranteed millions of dollars off-court endorsements, all down the tube because he has this rule where you have to go to college for 1 year and play for free while the school, the NCAA, companies, everybody makes a ton of money off your back, off your name, off your likeness, while you're not allowed to do so, while you're risking everything that's coming to you and would have come to you if you could have just gone right out of high school for one whole year. That is absurd, and I think this made that incredibly obvious.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone can really argue the latter. I think for sure one thing that's going to come out of this is you can kiss the have to go to college for 1 year rule goodbye ASAP, because it's just so obvious. That's one thing. The second thing, I think the fact that it was like a pair of Nikes, and it didn't have to be Nike, it could have been any shoe company, but the biggest shoe company who pays the school tens of millions of dollars for the players, the athletes, to wear their shoes for free, pays the coach millions of dollars for the players to wear the shoes, and we've brought this up in the past. Just think about that. The college coaches get paid millions of dollars by shoe companies for their players to wear the shoes, not even for the coach to wear the shoes, for the players to wear the shoes and the school to wear the shoes. It's just, I mean, that's ridiculous. Now I've lost track. What was your second question?
It was basically
about
answered.
Sitting
it,
out,
is it
about sitting out?
Yeah, should he sit out and kind of draw a line in the sand, so to speak?
Should he sit out? If you're a lock number one pick, and like I mentioned, you got all this coming to you after the season's over, provided you're healthy, then yes, you should absolutely sit out. However, I agree with you. I'm old school. Once you commit and you enroll in classes and you play half the season, and I'm old school. Like you're part of a team. You're part of something bigger than yourself. You're trying to win a championship, and you've made that commitment. You should see it through. That being said, if at any point your knee's bugging you or you're spraining an ankle, I think you, within that parameter of being committed to trying to play the season out, you don't do anything to risk your health. You don't push an injury or try to come back too early. You take that side, super cautious, and then hope for the best. I mean, the parameters stink, no question. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just absurd. And we just talked about how absurd it is that you have to go to school for the 1 year while everybody gets rich off you, and you're just risking your future. But I agree with you old school wise, like, now you're part of a team trying to win a national championship. You owe it to your teammates and everyone to see that through.
Yeah, just two quick things on this. Players, in my view, in college should have health insurance for the rest of their lives to address things that may have happened during their basketball career, in addition to obviously having health insurance while they're in college, take care of those things. And I also think that there should be revenue sharing where athletes receive a stipend for the rest of their lives. You know, whether it's $10,000 a year, $20,000 a year, you play X amount of time in college basketball with the amount of insane money that is there. They don't have to necessarily be paid per game or whatever, but I think down the road they should get a pension.
Yeah, I mean, there's some, you got to figure out something, especially for the big money teams like Duke, North Carolina, you know, what have you. Like, I mean, to say all.
Yeah, and it adjusts
players,
based like, upon the program. Like if you're if you go to a, if you're
a role player, should a role player in Dartmouth College get money? Probably not. But if you're on Duke and you're on ESPN every night and you have a reality show that airs once a week on ESPN, and
I think you should get money no matter where you. I think it should be on a scale. You get more amount of money. You get more if you're at Dartmouth, more if you're at Duke. But if you're at Dartmouth, you're still giving up opportunities to work in the off season and to perhaps earn money or to go in different areas of your professional life. So I think you should still get a stipend if based upon a percentage of what the basketball program is bringing in.
Right, I agree to that extent, but you know, people are like, well, then it creates inequality in college basketball. Is to me, it's like, well tough noogie.
It's already there. I mean, the inequality already exists, and certain programs make a lot more than others based upon how good their programs are, their TV deals.
My brother Luke's working with the HBL, who's trying to be like an alternative to college sports college basketball, in that it gives guys an option to go. Still go to school and work towards your degree, but basically everything you just said. Now you get to play basketball. You still play basketball, only you don't play for the school. You play for the HBL, and then you get all those things, all those protections, insurance. You make some money. You have a voice. You're not just a pawn for everybody else to get rich off, if that makes sense. But you still get all the same benefits of being a college basketball player. You still go to school, take classes. I'm not sure how all the logistics work out. Maybe we get an interview with Luke and learn about some of this.
That'd be good. Let's do it.
Because it's a really interesting concept to me, because I think it's the best of both worlds and addresses most, if not all, of the shortcomings that the current system has and the needs that current basketball players have.
This is The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. I'm Chris Ryan. That is Matt Bonner. We'll come back with more after this. Welcome back. This is The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. I am Chris Ryan here in the great state of New Hampshire. This segment of the show is brought to you by Douglas Leonard & Garvey. If you've been injured, the most important decision you're going to make is who your lawyer is going to be. I encourage you to check out Douglas Leonard & Garvey at nhlawoffice.com. So, of course, the Celtics and Bruins on the road leading up to this week. So, no opportunities for interviews down at the TD Garden or the practice facility. So, decided it was a good time to take a look back at some of the best interviews throughout the course of the year so far and some of the top interviews we've done so far here on the program. We're going to start with this conversation with Al Horford.
Joined by Al Horford. And Al, when you look at the quarter point of the season for this team, obviously the record isn't where you guys want it to be, but do you see the signs, particularly as you start to get some practice under your belt, that this is going to start to turn around for you guys?
It's been, the past 2 days have been great in practice. Really good energy, competitive. Now it's making sure that we translate that to the game, and we have a great opportunity here to build and start playing the way we want to play.
the way that the team started, did it kind of take you guys by surprise completely? Or did you see it kind of building throughout the course of the preseason, particularly as Coach was talking about the defensive side of the game? Did you get a sense that things were amiss at the start?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't necessarily encouraged by our preseason. You know, I felt like, you know, there were some things that we needed to do. But then we started the season and we beat Philly and we looked good there. But, you know, then it was just really up and down after that. You know, I'm more encouraged now. I did not see this type of start completely. Like, but we're in this position and we're working, you know, a way out of it.
Do you see kind of multiple facets of why there has been, you know, the difficulty early on that you need to address kind of individually? Or do you think that collectively you can address some of the aspects of whether it's the chemistry on offense, getting good shots more consistently, or on the defensive side where it, perhaps, you know, effort and intensity has been an issue?
Yeah, I mean, I think rightfully so, everybody focuses on the offense. Mm-hmm. The way that I look at it is, when we're locked in defensively, everyone doing their job and what they're supposed to, we just go to another level. And the more consistent we're on the defensive end, I feel like offense will take care of itself. And I think that we have to address things individually. We all have to look, see what we can do better. But really, as a team, making sure that we just come together, because we have a lot of great players. And it's about just, you know, coming together and we do that at times, but that's the challenge, and we're trying to be more consistent with that approach.
Yeah, just looking at the defensive side of things, you know, there's obviously been great team defenses in the past that not have featured necessarily great individual defenders. You have maybe one or two, and you mentioned the team defense aspect of things, where not only do you have, who seem to have really good individual defenders, but the team ability is there as well in terms of the rotations, the intellect that each of the players has. So what do you think has been amiss, particularly in regards to the team defense side?
You know, I just think that, you know, one of the things that we keep developing is trust and just continuing to communicate with one another. You know, I think that, you know, in games you do that a lot, but we have a lot of guys that we can all guard, you know, basically a 1 through 5 from another team. And, you know, what we've been dealing with is, you know, necessarily not communicating at times on defense. And that's something that we've gotten better at quickly as the season gone on. But in order for us to be at that elite level, we're very close. And, you know, I think that we're making progress in that area.
Was the Knicks game kind of the moment where you guys realized that, okay, this is not something that is just going to kind of snap out, and it was kind of, you had to hit rock bottom to move forward from there?
You know, I think time will tell, but as of right now, yes. I think that, you know, once we went into that game and we saw that we weren't playing at the level that Coach expected us to, or that we expected out of ourselves, I think that was kind of like a moment that we realized, and then we went to Atlanta and did a much better job. Obviously lost in Dallas. Felt like we lost some focus there. But I think that we are starting to turn the corner in that regard.
One of the most interesting and fun parts of being around this team is how much, you know, each of these guys loves basketball, talking basketball, adapting, and, you know, game planning and working on individual matchups and the team side of things. How has that been, you know, during the course of this process, where there was like this natural fun that existed last year throughout the course of the year for each challenge that developed? Now, as the challenges have come this year and there haven't been the results, what has the process been like kind of behind the scenes, and kind of the level of joy that you guys have in playing the game?
Yeah, I think that, you know, there's a lot of variables that go into it. I think that's got to be the most important thing. We are enjoying them. We're having fun with the game. And when we play the right way, you know, we get that sense. You know, so I think that for us, the challenge is, you know, last year we had some success. Obviously not what we wanted to accomplish, but we had some success. So I think that we learned from last year, but now it's finding new challenges. And with this new group, we haven't, you know, it is a new group. And really trying to make sure that we all you know, feel good about playing with one another and making the game easy.
Final thing on the offensive side, you know, as I was talking about kind of before, it seems that a lot of good passes will lead to good shots in years past. And a lot of time we'll see the ball move on the offensive end, but you'll end up with a contested shot this year. And you're one of the best, you know, obviously bigs in terms of handling the ball and putting the ball in a good spot that allows for either success for the individual shooting or going to drive there or for a good to make a good secondary pass. So in your view, why has the passes not necessarily led to the best shots and scoring opportunities this year?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that we've talked about it, about making sure that our passes are crisper, we're reading defenses, you know, much easier. I think that we're putting a lot of our guys in new positions or different mm-hmm. positions that they probably haven't been used to, or more than anything, defenses are playing them different. Mm-hmm. You know, and last year we were able to get away with certain stuff, but this year teams are aware of the players. They know them well, they're studying them, and now it's about making adjustments. So all that stuff just throws the timing off a little bit. So the thing that we need to do is we just need to keep making sure that we execute with pace and take what the defense gives us. And we did a better job of that than New Orleans game. So hopefully that's a building block for the game tomorrow.
Al, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And Al Horford right there. And, of course, much of the drama around the Celtics this year has remained consistent. That back from a show in early December. And a lot of it has had to do with rumors, questions. Does the team get along? Are they having fun? Are they not having fun? And that's been a big theme throughout the course of this season, and probably what got lost in all of the Super Bowl hype was, you know, what was taking place with Kyrie Irving. And I was down in New York at Madison Square Garden for that, and here are the conversations with Kyrie Irving, Gordon Hayward, and also Marcus Smart.
I mean, well, at the end of the day, I'm going to do what I feel is best for my career, and, that's just where it stands. And my focus this season is winning the championship with the Boston Celtics. Obviously we had goals coming into the season, and the primary goal is to win championships, so that's where my focus is.
Has your mindset shifted, though, in regards to re-signing with Boston, like the announcement you
made? That's me July 1st. I mean, I'm going to just do what's best for me. That's where it really comes down to. Obviously, this has become like an entertainment thing for everybody, so, you know, somebody else is asking for a trade, and I'm thrown into that, and uncertainty comes back on me. And, you know, at the end of the day, like, I don't live in this little hub that, you know, some people call me about this, you know, of course my name gets keep thrown on in this. I'm not worried about a reputation, not worried about a legacy to leave. I'm just trying to be a human being, trying to make the best decision for me and my family.
Kyrie Irving right there. Gordon Hayward has had three strong bounce-back performances after a difficult two games, including a loss to the Golden State Warriors, in which Gordon Hayward was the subject of a number of reports and criticism, and talked with Gordon about that.
The team's obviously been focused on being a better road team. Is this a step forward in that direction? Have you seen more intensity from this group on the road as of late?
Tonight's one game for us, but I thought we were better tonight for sure. And, we just, like you said, we got to be more intense and have to bring our own energy when we go on the road.
Is it about developing, you know, consistency? Because even in this game, you had stretches where you guys were really, really good, but then you let off the intensity for a little bit against a team that's undermanned.
Yeah, no doubt. The game's all about consistency, and, we've had flashes of brilliance and then flashes where we're very, very, very poor, so... we got to be able to, no matter what the circumstances are, be great all the time.
Brad was saying that the last two games here against the Knicks and the Hornets, you've been really where he wants you to be in terms of the intensity, driving to the basket, playing physically, and after the previous games prior to that. Do you feel like you've been the Gordon Hayward you want to be the last couple games?
I think I've just been trying to be more aggressive driving it, just trying to get to the rim, get something going early that way, and then kind of working my way outside.
Was there kind of a reset over after those after the previous two games, strictly the Warriors game for you, or was it full steam ahead?
No, I mean, there was no reset. It was maybe a more focused effort on just trying to drive and get to the rim, but those two games are
it's a long season, so those, I try not to get too worried about games that are duds or games that are even diamonds, you know, so just try to stay even keeled on all that.
Brad was talking about paint drives as well and how that's what this team needs in order to generate three-point shots, also the easy looks, free throws, and so forth. That's obviously your game as well, drive and dish. Do you see that from the whole group where that's where you guys need to be successful as an offense?
Yeah, I mean, I think the more threats you are in the paint, I mean, like you said, the easier looks you're going to get, and we've got so many guys that are capable of getting in there and doing that. So then we just got to do a good job of reading it, if it's for ourselves or for others.
Gordon Hayward right there. It's been a great year for Marcus Smart. He's in the starting lineup for the Celtics. The starting unit really seems to work. And an extended conversation with the Celtics guard.
Madison Square Garden is kind of the mecca of basketball. What do you feel when you come into your building like this? Obviously, the Knicks have not been too good during the course of your lifetime, but what does it mean to step into a building that feels like this?
Feels good. I mean, this is every competitor's dream. You know, to step on bright lights, big court, and a big-time name. So, you know, when you step into Madison Square Garden, you know, everybody in the world knows this facility and, you know, the importance it has on basketball.
When you look at this season for the Celtics, what do you see? Obviously, the record is getting better. You guys have played good, consistent basketball over the last couple months, but it seems like there's, you know, been obviously a lot of drama around the team. What's going on with Kyrie, trade rumors and such. Is that just a part of the league, or has this year been a little bit more of a roller coaster than perhaps you expected?
It's part of the league. You know, you can only control what you control. You can't worry about the things you can't control and, you know, lose sleep over that. And it's part of it, you know. You can't get too high, you can't get too low. You just got to, you know, be really good at moving on.
Was there a feeling, though, that this was going to be it? Because obviously there's a lot of hype in the offseason that this was a team that could challenge, you know, the Warriors' record in terms of all-time wins. You're going to roll through the Eastern Conference. Has there been some value, though, in the fact that it has not gone the way that you anticipated and you guys have been tested and have had to kind of, you know, prove yourselves through the course of this year and find yourselves?
We knew it wasn't going to be easy. We knew, you know, we had high expectations for ourselves just like everyone else, but, you know, it hasn't gone as planned, and that's the irony of it. You know, when you always got something planned out, you know, and you have it a certain way, it kind of really never really goes the way that you planned it, and there's always some ups and downs, bumps and bruises, and so you just got to, you know, like I said, you can't get too high, you can't get too low, and you got to be able to move on.
The narrative that you guys are underachievers, is that one that you, you know, push back on? Obviously, you're not at the top of the conference, but there's a lot of season left, and you guys are going to be defined, obviously, by what you do in the postseason.
I mean, it's early, you know. We're all, every team, every player is playing for that one goal, and that's the NBA championship. So, you know, we're still in the running. We haven't been knocked out. Our season isn't over. So, you know, to say we underachieved is a... You know, it's a little bit, I mean, I get it from the aspect of, you know, with the hype that's around the team, why they would say, but we haven't underachieved anything. You know, we're still in the running for our goal, and that's an NBA championship. So, you know, we're just going through a road that others probably don't have to go through or already been through or is coming up to it. So, you know, we're just going through it, and, you know, we still have a lot of basketball left.
What's the mindset that you have to put yourself in to play the type of defense that you play? You've talked before about having kind of a football player's mentality, and they'll say, you know, you have to think about all these different things to motivate you and to put you on, you know, the edge in terms of where you are, where you want to go out, you want to achieve, you want to be able to kind of have a killer instinct, so to speak. Do you find yourself there when you're playing defense where there's just kind of this, you know, rush of emotions and you think about doubters, haters, and are able to draw motivation from that?
Nah, it's just me.
Yeah.
You know, I take pride in, you know, not getting embarrassed by the offensive guy. You know, growing up, you know, you watch SportsCenter, you watch SportsCenter Top 10, ESPN, you see all of it, you hear the thun-a-thun, and, you know, it's kind of like when, you know, guys are doing something in a fight or something and they hear World Star. That's the worst thing you want to hear because, you know, the camera's out and you know that it's going to go viral. So, you know, for me, it's, you know, just going out there and playing. You know, that's just who I am and that's just how I was raised to do it.
everybody sees the physical things you do defensively, but to me, watching the mental things that you do, whether it's taking the charge, whether it's blocking a shot, whether it's getting to a ball that, you know, embarrassing the offensive player at times, how much of defense is, you know, mental? And do you feel like you can, you know, own a guy by taking a charge here and there, or getting away with a foul, playing a little bit more physical against guys? Is there a mental side, what you do defensively, that's kind of underrated?
Yeah, you know, it's hard, you know, to stop a guy or to be able to contain a guy who, you know, others might, you know, prefer as unguardable or uncontainable or anything like that. And you know, but it's really just about effort. You know, it doesn't take a unique skill set to play defense. It just takes effort. You know, you don't have to be faster. You don't have to be stronger. You just have to want it. You know, it's all about multiple efforts, effort after effort after effort. And you got to understand that you're going to get beat. You're going to get beat a lot of times. But that's okay. You know, it can't deter you from going out there and doing the same thing over and over again.
Why do you think the starting lineup has worked so well this year? You know, with Kyrie, obviously yourself, and Mook, and we've seen, and Jason, and obviously Al. Why do you think that's worked so well? How do you guys complement each other? Because not only do you start the game, but a lot of time Brad has you finishing the games as well, which is most important.
Just we balance each other out in that aspect of just, you know, we know what everybody likes, you know, we're unique in the way that, you know, unfortunately we have a lot of talent. Fortunately, unfortunately, we have a lot of talent that any one of these guys could play somewhere else and get more minutes than they probably would love than they're getting here, or a different role. But the first unit, you know, I'm not trying to go out there and score 30. I could, you know, just like anybody else. You know, you shoot the ball enough times and, you know, percentages and things like that. So, but I'm not that, you know, so. You know, that allows Kyrie, you know, and Jason and those guys to touch the ball and to have the ball more in their hands and you know, do, you know, what they do. And then, you know, they go out there and score, you know. So I do other things to keep myself on the court and other things to make myself valuable.
Finally, for you this year, do you feel, you know, less pressure? Do you feel that there's been, you know, more you've been able to kind of have more of a consistent performance without the contract looming in the backdrop, as you shot the ball well? Do you feel there's more confidence from having, you know, that contract signed and you being stable and here with the Celtics and their commitment to you?
A lot of people ask me, I don't even think it has anything really to do with the contract. Yeah, it's good to have it out the way, but, you know, I'm not dealing with a lot of stress what I was dealing with. You know, everybody, I don't know if they forget or they just don't want to put into consideration that I was going through stuff with my whole family, my mom was fighting the fight, and you know, my mind was focused on that. It really wasn't focused on basketball. I was injury after injury, and things like that. So, you know, when it came down to really what was important, basketball, believe it or not, was not at the top of my list for probably one of the first times in my life. So, you know, being able to, you know, to live with that and to move on, you know, and not have to deal with that anymore. It's bittersweet. You know, I lose my mom, and, you know, a big part of my family. But it's a distraction that I don't have to worry about anymore because, you know, I know she's in good hands and I know she's good and she's in a better place. So, you know, that takes up 90% of my stress right there.
That is Marcus Smart. This segment of The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Douglas Leonard and Garvey. We'll come back and wrap things up after this. Welcome back. This is The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. I am Chris Ryan. This segment of the show is brought to you by the Prescription Center. For more information, visit prescription-center.com. It's going to be a busy week of sports in Boston. The Bruins and Celtics both at home, and we'll take a look at both of those squads, as well as some of the teams they're playing, including the Tampa Bay Lightning, who are having an incredible season in the NHL on next week's edition of The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. And the week after that, I'll be in Fort Myers with the Red Sox at spring training, taking a look at the Sox as they look to defend their World Series championship. Our trip down to spring training is brought to you by Douglas Leonard and Garvey, as well as P&N Automotive, the Spradling Group, Dave Parker for City Council, the Concord Parks and Recreation Department, New England College, and the Greater Concord Chamber of Commerce. Of course, we're joined by Red Sox front office staff, including the president of baseball operations, Dave Dombrowski, manager Alex Cora, and many of the Sox stars as well, including Mookie Betts, Xander Bogaerts, Jackie Bradley Jr., Chris Sale, and many more coming your way from Fort Myers, Florida. You've been listening to The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. I am Chris Ryan. Thanks so much for joining us for the show. Again, this segment of the program has been presented by the Prescription Center. And to get past episodes of the program, you could go to our website, nhtalkradio.com, for this long-running program.